Hey, it's John Tesh, and welcome to the John Tesh Podcast featuring Gib Gerard. Great stuff to share with you in this episode, including why experts say we should never trust anybody after lunch. You'll also find out what we can learn from a study on farm pigs about how to stay happy and optimistic. And we're going to answer the question, why is it that more couples than ever before in the history of the planet, whether they're married or not, are going to couples therapy right now? That's all coming up. So Gib has gone swimming with the sharks. We know this. He and his wife did that. Mm-hmm. A lot of tropical resorts offer an experience of swimming with the dolphins. We've done that as a family. That's amazing. But now there's a new swimming adventure, of course. It's called snorkeling with salmon.
It sounds like a bad documentary.
I want to do this, but probably for all the wrong reasons. So, but anyway,
I'm terrified of this.
Anyway, so it's offered in places where salmon swim and spawn. Great idea. Right. Thank you for that. Like Northern California, Oregon.
It's offered in places where salmon are. that's the shorthand.
Yeah, some of these stories are. All right. So the waters off of Campbell River in BC, there are roughly 800,000 salmon that migrate through the waters.
That's crazy.
People can do a diving trip where they put on a wetsuit and they swim with 800,000 fish.
That's amazing.
So amazing. This is my favorite part of it. This is my favorite. Gib's going to love this. Okay, you ready for this? Quote, yes, you may see bears and other predators too. That's the latest swim experience snorkeling with salmon.
This is my issue. Okay. This is my issue because when I'm swimming with sharks, which I have done, one, you kind of know the species. I had reef sharks, which are not going to hurt me. Only like three species of sharks are actually going to be a threat to you. Bull sharks, tiger sharks, and great whites.
Okay.
And occasionally oceanic white tips, but that's only if you're in a shipwreck. Point being, any shark can hurt you, but those are really the only ones you have to worry about. The rest are just, they're interesting to observe, and it's fun to swim with them. In swimming with them, they are the predator. That's the only thing you have to worry about when you're on the reef, because all the other fish are worried about the shark. So if you see the shark and you know where that is, you don't have to worry about anything else getting you. The eels are going to stay away. Everything's going to stay away.
Thank God.
When you're swimming with the salmon, which the joy is to swim with these amazing silvery fish that move through the water so amazingly.
These things are huge.
They're massive.
I mean, they're huge. And they jump out of the water.
Right. So you're focused on them. But what about the salmon sharks and the bears that you've mentioned? Some of those bears can swim. You're in the middle of their prey. So I will swim with sharks. I don't go swimming with seals. For this exact reason. I'm not swimming with the seals because then I look like a seal. I'm not swimming with the salmon because I don't want a grizzly to just yank me out of the water and then toss me like a rag doll onto the shore. So that's why I won't do snorkeling with salmon.
But you know, I love salmon, right? I'll be able to eat it.
Yeah.
And I just my image
they're
is
gonna know.
My image is just because they're gonna flim it up. They're swimming upstream. And my idea is that I'd sit there with like a knife and fork.
Yeah.
Right? And they'd swim toward me and I'd just jam one, just get one.
Have you seen bears? You're describing what bears do.
Well, wait till the bears, because I know the bears eat. They eat. Yeah, you just stand there, wait for the bear to go.
Right. And then you take the bear's spot, like a line. Like, all right, buddy, that's enough. Like you're at a really nice buffet.
All right,
at the seafood buffet. All right, you've one portion and then let somebody else have a turn.
Anyway, this is available to you.
Snorkeling with salmon.
It's our job to set the table for you. You decide what you want to do.
I won't do it.
And so there's a big resort, Campbell River in British Columbia, and also California.
Hopefully they reach out to us and like, you should try this. We'll come visit us.
Exactly. It's like swimming with the salmon with a shotgun. I don't even think that would take care of the bear, would it?
No, you need an actual like bear gun.
I love all the latest relationship in intel and mm-hmm. And you know, back in the day, my mom and dad, right? So I grew up on Long Island, as a lot of people know, and I was born in 1952. And you know, if my parents had a problem, there was no therapy session. If you had a problem, you went to
you drank about it.
Thank you. You did. You drank about it. And I saw some of that. I may have seen some of that in my family. Also, if you had a problem, they just put you in the mental institution.
Right.
Right. That was it.
And then
you put a couple of electrodes on either side of your head.
Nurse Ratchet would take out your brain.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so like that. And they only had like one or two drugs.
And they were powerful.
They were. Yeah. I have no experience with that. But when my parents, the reason I'm bringing this up is that how I could tell when I came home from school or from sports, whatever, how I could tell that my parents were having a couples problem was that my dad would be on the lawn watering the lawn with like a vengeance, you know, like the full blast.
The same patch of grass for 35 minutes.
With a fire hose, you know, like, I'm watering the grass. And then my mom would be inside, cooking fried chicken with two aprons on. You know, it's like, I'm cooking chicken. And I thought, what the heck is, nobody ever told me what was going on, which is why I'm weird today. You know, I'm codependent. So anyway.
You ate well and you could, had a nice lawn.
We had the best lawn. I mean, that one patch, I mean, you could high jump on that lawn.
Your parents had a good marriage, year of marriage. All the grass died and you lost 10 pounds.
That's so true. Yeah. So anyway, today, everybody's going to therapy, apparently. Oh, yeah. So this is according to a recent survey of engaged, married, and divorced people. Over 50% of millennials have undergone couples counseling. That's a big number.
It's huge.
One in four went before they were even engaged. So why is this happening? Dr. Megan Fleming is a relationship therapist. We've had her on the show before. She says today's couples expect a lot more from their partners. Mm-hmm. They want respect, stability, friendship, equal partnership, financial security, romance, mac and cheese, I don't know what, all rolled into one.
Yeah,
and
you make it sound like this is a huge, huge ask, but it's what we should have in our partners.
I understand, but they don't want to work on anything. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that. Of course they want to work on it. That's what they're doing. Younger couples are willing to put in the work to get it right, quote unquote. They want to tackle issues before they risk the health of the relationship. So because mental health and therapy are much more widely discussed today,
sure.
They feel no shame in saying, in fact, on people's dating apps now, on profiles, I've been to therapy for 2 years.
Look, everybody has some kind of mental baggage, and pretending that you don't is not the stoic, lone wolf appealing thing that we think of it as. It's not that. Everybody has something that they have to process, and having a context to process it is just a good thing. If you don't, you bottle it up and it comes out in other personality disorders.
Right.
So don't do that to yourself. Go ahead and get yourself some help from somebody who's a professional, knows what they're doing. And if you're in a relationship, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Because if there is something that annoys you and you haven't unpacked the fact that it comes from your family of origin, so maybe the way your partner loads the dishwasher really irritates you. I understand that it irritates you, but it shouldn't irritate you in the way that it does. And that's just letting you know, because in your family where you grew up, the way the dishwasher was loaded, I'm picking something innocuous on purpose here. The way the dishwasher was loaded was a symbol of how much attention was being paid to X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
And maybe in your husband's family of origin, that was not the case. They did not care so much about how the dishwasher was loaded. And now it's an argument that's breeding resentment in your relationship. Well, you need to nip that in the bud, because maybe your partner has no idea how important dishwasher loading is to you. Maybe clutter on the countertop doesn't matter to your partner, but it really matters to you. As a result, you're building resentment. Nip that in the bud. Have the conversation early. Have the conversation with a trained professional who can help you unpack what the real reasoning behind your anger is or your resentment is, and go from there. That's the value of this.
And the bottom line of this whole thing is that if you find your partner is watering the lawn with a fire hose, then get yourself into therapy. You don't want those electrodes on the head.
Nobody wants electrodes on the head unless you're getting the new Neuralink from Elon Musk.
From Elon. Hey, let's take a moment here and talk about rich people. They have some bad habits, apparently.
Okay.
So, according to the journal Social Influence, if you've ever been in need of help from strangers, do not go to Rodeo Drive or Fifth Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
Rodeo Drive, of course, being in Los Angeles, we know where Fifth Avenue is, because according to the journal Social Influence, when people are near fancy shops, they're meaner. Yeah. In fact, the title of a study was Wrong Place to Get Help. The researchers from Sorbonne University conducted experiments in luxury shopping districts and found that passersby were less likely to help a stranger in need than those on an average ordinary street because people are influenced by what's around them. And it turns out luxury shops make us feel materialistic, whether we're buying anything or not. They give us an increased self-worth and they make us feel more competitive. I've seen this with people in fancy cars like McLarens or any of that stuff.
Oh,
they're more likely to hit people in a crosswalk.
I mean, 100%. They're more likely to hit people in a crosswalk. They're more likely to cut you off. They're more likely to take your parking space or take longer in the parking space. This is a version of entitlement. And literally, this is the message of the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, the first part of that whole parable is the conversation about these people who are, you know, supposed to be the pillars of society, who are in these positions of honor, not willing to lower themselves to help the person in the ditch who has been beaten. It's entitlement. I mean, I've experienced this. You are far less likely to have a quiet, easy conversation with somebody and get a smile from a stranger in these locations.
Yeah.
You will get good Pinkberry, though, which is that bougie frozen yogurt place. Yeah.
Bougie. In one experiment, only 23% of luxury shoppers were willing to help a disabled woman whose friend had to run into a shop, while three times as many people on an ordinary street were willing to help. So this is a real thing.
Yeah. We now have the empirical evidence to back up what we have known in story for so long.
Coming up, the amazing things we can learn from the average farm pig.
Eating habits?
It's actually organizational stuff. I mean, it's crazy. Anyway, okay. Plus why we should never trust anybody after lunch. Those are coming up, plus some more stuff on the podcast. But first, this. You know, what I hear from many people who come up to me after my live concerts is, oh, John, I've always wanted to play the piano, but I don't have time for all those lessons. Or they say, I'm too old to start learning now. I can teach you how to play a song on the piano in just 3 days without spending 1 minute learning music theory or reading sheet music. We do this together by me teaching you how to play my most memorable songs. So go to Tesh.com right now and get on the waiting list for my brand new online course, The John Tesh Piano Method. It's Tesh.com. Tesh.com. All right, Gibbs, so here is a headline for you. Never trust anybody after lunch.
I never do.
This is a study. I don't trust myself after lunch. I got to go take a nap. A study in the Journal of Psychological Science found that people tend to be a lot more honest in the morning. In a series of experiments, people were asked to solve math problems, some of which were impossible, either in the morning or afternoon, and were told they'd be paid for every correct answer. They were then asked to self-report their scores.
Interesting.
So the study subjects who answered math problems in the afternoon were up to 50% more likely to cheat than people who took the math test in the morning. This is crazy.
It's amazing.
The experts say it's because our self-control is stronger in the morning because our energy is higher, but as our batteries drain from our everyday activities, we become less ethical. Another factor is sleep. The more tired we are, the less moral we are. So whether you're trying to manage your own temptations or you're a parent, a teacher, or a manager, know that we're all more honest in the morning. Wasn't there a thing about judges?
It was in either in Freakonomics or in one of the Malcolm Gladwell books, where it was talking about how judges in the afternoon, if they were hungry before lunch, they made worse decisions, and if they were tired after lunch, they made worse decisions.
It's like a window or you're going back to prison.
So these were parole judges that were and sentencing judges, and they were you would get much worse sentences, or you'd be much more likely to go back to jail if you got them based solely on the time that you went in.
Yeah.
And that is an insane statistic. And here's more evidence that backs it up. You know, we've talked about this with doctors too, where when you get the surgery matters for how focused they are. And the reality is particularly in the US, we don't take enough breaks. We don't take a lot of vacations. We work longer hours, yeah. And we don't really value those unplugged moments where you just take a second and reset your brain. And this is what, in my opinion, this is one of the consequences of it. We are better off when we have a little bit of energy. We don't value sleep appropriately. And more of the research we talk about shows that we need to treat sleep just like getting 10,000 steps a day,
yes,
or getting enough protein or fiber in your diet. We need to treat sleep like that for our brain and for our overall health. And this is just another study that underscores it, which is when we are refreshed in the morning, when we have our high energy, we're better people.
Yeah.
And the more time that we take for ourselves, I bet you if you took a siesta in the afternoon, you would see that people are just as moral afterwards. But, you know, that we have to run the study in Spain.
Everybody's so busy that the judge isn't going to be taking a nap before he passes judgment.
Hey, look,
judgment.
Get your surgery in the morning. Get your parole hearing in the morning. You got to do it.
Like, imagine you're in jail for something and you're up for parole. It's like they give you like 3 p.m. You're like,
oh, no,
hey,
thanks.
Can we do this?
No, thanks. Yeah. Skip me today. I'll go tomorrow. First thing.
I'll risk being stabbed in the cell rather than going.
I'll just sleep right here on the floor. I'm fine. Just don't worry about me.
Okay, as promised. Here we go with what we can all learn from the average farm pig. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, when I was a kid, I was born on Long Island. I'm the only Yankee in my family. And my parents both grew up in rural North Carolina on farms, working farms. And so my parents would dump me off every summer when I was like, you know, your son's age, like 6, 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I would work the farm for 3 months, you know, 2 months.
A nice vacation for your parents, by the way.
For them. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. For me, it was like, you know, there was no electricity. You went to sleep when the sun went down, woke up with the sunrise. And my job was to feed the chickens and to slop the hogs and to shoot shotguns at the crows who were trying to eat the watermelons. That was my job.
Six years old.
I've got like 7 weapons and I was driving a car.
But look, you're still talking about it to this day.
It seemed hard at the time. All the other 6-year-olds were smoking cigarettes, but I couldn't get a hold of any.
Yeah. No, because you were too busy with chores.
The reason I bring this up is that when I was dealing with the pigs and the chickens, but especially the pigs, I never thought that, wow, there, I can really take some. This is better than reading the book Atomic Habits. I'm watching what the pigs are doing. I'm thinking, now this is going to be my template for the rest of my life. However, Dr. David Agus, a professor of medicine at USC, famous guy, who wrote the book The Book of Animal Secrets, says that you can learn a lot from the average farm pig because they follow a routine that keeps them happy and optimistic. I never saw an optimistic pig, but let's go on. He says that new research into animal personalities has shown that pigs have a lot in common with humans, including their capacity to play and socialize and experience emotions. And when it comes to mood, quote, a pig's happiness is often linked to following consistent routines and having a consistent environment. And pigs that were found to be more neurotic and millions of dollars on these studies.
I just imagine a pig sitting on like an analyst couch. Yeah, you know, nobody really likes me.
You don't want a neurotic pig. They're pretty dangerous. They're most likely to behave erratically. They had no routines and they had a changing environment.
The guy at Starbucks messed up my order. I think it was on purpose.
he says, Dr. Iga says, he's learned that pigs and humans, they want to have a routine so they can be in control.
Yeah. So the pigs thing, cool. I'm glad we know that about the pigs. I think it's all life forms. I think all of us, we like our routines. We like to have the expected show up in the expected. It makes us more able to handle the unexpected if we have the expected available to us. So for us, what that means, obviously it doesn't mean that you need to have your breakfast in a trough at the same time every morning.
Not a bad idea.
Or that you need to have the same like wet spot in your yard that you roll around in to cool off every afternoon. But it does mean that the more things that we put on autopilot, the more things that we add to our routine, I go to the gym at this time every day. I eat at this time every day. I wake up at this time every day. Yes, Saturday and Sunday too. You start to add those things into your life. Everything starts to peel away and become a lot easier because you're using less mental energy to get yourself to the gym, to get out of bed.
That's good.
You're using less mental energy to figure out when to eat or what to eat. When you start to do that, it frees up your brain to deal with the unexpected, the email asking for something immediately, the call from the school saying your kid is sick and you need to pick them up. Your routines actually help you adapt to those situations better and with a better understanding of where the important things to deal with are. Because when you have no routine, everything is a significant brain attention grabber. Everything requires a certain amount of mental energy that you may or may not have. So when something new comes along, you don't have a way of discerning, is the call from the school more important or is going and getting to the gym more important because you're out of routine?
You know, this is great what you just said. We probably didn't need the whole pig thing then. I mean, just go with your
group. I mean, pigs, just to give us another example.
But I have to tell you, as you were talking about all this, I'm thinking, you know, when I would wake up in the morning and I had to go slop the hogs, the moment I walked out of the house, all the pigs would come and surround me, which is a little creepy when you're only like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
But it happened at the same time every day. And then they would go roll around in to cool off at the same. So they did have routines. I mean, I don't think they had one of those. I don't think they had a day planner, but it was in their head.
I think a lot of those pigs had read Atomic Habits. I think to your point, the pig version of Atomic Habits came out, you know, a couple centuries ago. So
what we can learn from the routines of pigs. Yeah. Again, Dr. David Agus's book is The Book of Animal Secrets. I'm sure there's many more in there that we can talk about.
Wizard of Oz made it seem like pigs are really dangerous. Because remember when Dorothy falls in the pig pen and they all panic and pull her up?
Yeah, it was crazy. Right. Random facts here. Get your opinion on this. Fact number one, 19 to 20% of people say they have faked a phone conversation to avoid having to talk to someone face to face.
I hope nobody that I know is going to see this.
You've done this.
100%. I do this all the time. I do this all the time.
I wouldn't be able to pull it off. Something would happen to me.
You absolutely. Hold on a second. Yeah. Oh, shoot. you guys keep going. It's great seeing you.
You're an actor. I mean, you've been in what is that thing with the improv?
Groundlings?
Groundlings, yeah.
That thing. What is that thing?
I sound like Norm MacDonald. What is that? Okay. Anyway, so yeah.
I think 20% is low.
So you're talking to somebody. How do you do this?
Okay, so let's say you're at the grocery store and you see somebody, and maybe you've had the you've started talking to them. Oh, it's great seeing you.
Old boyfriend, old girlfriend, maybe?
Maybe you've caught up with them, right? And the catching up is over, and now it's turning to something you don't want to talk about anymore. Oh, gosh. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have to take this to my kid's school. And you step away, and then you put the phone to your ear. I've also, there's even worse is if you see somebody you really don't want to talk to, like if I'm at the school and I'm there to pick my kids up, I'll have the phone on and there's a mom or a dad that I don't want to see. I will have the phone at my ear, already. And so I can just wave at them and be like, sorry, I'm alone.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I would mess this up. I know I would.
Sure.
I would like be using the wrong side of the phone or something.
I have used apps that actually give the other side of the phone conversation and play it through and make the phone ring and everything before in order to get out of these kinds of conversations.
All right. So now, since we're talking about etiquette, let's just do one more piece before we let these people go. New York Magazine came up with a list of the new rules of conduct for society. So number one is they say you can cancel almost any evening plans up until 2 p.m. At 2 p.m., there's still time for your friend to find another dinner companion.
Sure.
The caveat is if somebody's cooking for you in that situation, you must tell them the night before.
Right, because they have to buy ingredients.
Right.
They have to clean parts of their house that they never clean if company's not coming over. 24 hours notice is appropriate for that. 2 p.m., it makes sense. I want to let anybody know, if we have dinner plans and you don't want to go to dinner, you can let me know 5 minutes before, and I will be absolutely fine with it.
You still want to go out.
There's nothing I like more than sitting at home in my living room with a night of canceled plans, with a glass of wine in my hand, a show streaming on my TV, and a blanket on my lap.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm the sleepy time tea bear. That's me.
Yeah. I was going to tell you a long story, but I'll do it next time. The next code of conduct is if somebody starts telling you a story you've heard before, this is the etiquette department here, you have 2 seconds to tell them. Simply interject with, oh yeah, that was hilarious or unbelievable. However, if you don't say it within 2 seconds, you have to listen to them tell the whole story again.
Okay, so I understand that this is the etiquette, but there are certain storytellers but you will take it if you are a minute into the story and I realize you've told it before, because sometimes it takes like a minute of you getting certain details out for me to realize, oh no, I do know this story.
Because I changed it.
That's the story. It's just 7 times bigger now. I can stop you
You are homeless. You're homeless now. You were homeless.
Everybody's read your book. We know that story.
Okay, thank you.
There are plenty of people where if you don't get them early on, they will finish a very long story. But there's also, I have these people, not you, who tell, like my oldest daughter, she does not know how to edit. So if she will tell a story that should be a 1 minute story that takes 17 minutes to tell.
Yeah.
And as a result, if I've heard it before, I'm going to interrupt her and we're going to switch no matter what. The problem is that a lot of times the people that you feel like you can interrupt, they will not hear the interruption. They will finish the story anyway.
Right. They just plow right through.
Yes. Yeah. I have another friend where even if he's already told me the story, if I don't get to him in those first 2 seconds and I tell him, oh, no, I've heard this. He goes, yeah. And then he still finishes the story. He still tells the whole story. He's like, no, I've already heard this and it's just you and me. The other thing I'll say is even if you have heard the story and you're around other people, don't embarrass the person by telling everybody you've heard the story before. Because that makes the person seem like they only have a couple of stories they tell over and over and over again.
My wife does this to me all the time. We'll meet a stranger, and I'll start telling a story, and she'll go, I've heard the story. you've been married to me for 32 years. I know you've heard this story.
You were there.
She's like, don't tell it now while I'm here.
You were there. But she also, if she's heard the story already and we're talking and you start to retell a story, she leaves the room.
Exactly. Yeah. Just starts walks to, away. Starts to peel off. Yeah. You know, it's the same way with your daughter when she's telling the rules. She makes up a game and she's telling the rules in like 15 gosh. Minutes and you know all the other 12-year-olds are just peeling off.
It's Uno. It's not that hard.
Hey, listen. We've had a good time with you guys today. Thanks for being with us. And thanks so much for all the kind comments. Remember, you can reach us directly by email. It's john@tesh.com. That's john@tesh.com. For Gib Gerard, I'm John Tesh. We'll see you next time. You know, what I hear from many people who come up to me after my live concerts is, oh, John, I've always wanted to play the piano, but I don't have time for all those lessons. Or they say, I'm too old to start learning now. I can teach you how to play a song on the piano in just 3 days without spending 1 minute learning music theory or reading sheet music. We do this together by me teaching you how to play my most memorable songs. So go to Tesh.com right now and get on the waiting list for my brand new online course, The John Tesh Piano Method. It's Tesh.com. Tesh.com.